This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Hello, and welcome to Long Shots Golf Betting Podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. I am Matt Brown, joined each and every week by Wes Reynolds, Kelly Bidlin. This is the Scottish Open edition of Long Shots. Before we get going, I wasn't here last week. Go ahead, tip of the cap to both of you guys, Davis Thompson. I had his ass a week ago and finished second and didn't get home. And I actually in the runner-up seat yet again. That is three tournaments in a row with the runner-up. And so that feels great. But, not that I'm bitter or anything. It's just, not that it really hurts me like a kick in the crotch from a donkey or anything. But, yeah, it's fine. But I'm glad you guys both got home. I mean, it was a deal where going into Sunday, even with the lead, you didn't feel all that confident because everybody was shooting like 6, 7, 8 under. And so if he didn't go low, he could have played very well and still got caught, but he actually decided to go out there and just make all the birdies too. And so you knew he was running pure. I don't know if you guys saw this, there was a 3-hole stretch in the first like 6 or 7 holes where he went birdie, birdie, birdie. And it was 15 footer, 29 footer and 14 footer for birdie, and it was just like guy is making every single putt on the course. He's going to win this tournament. So good job to you guys out there. And honestly, a guy that is on the rise. I'm not betting him again this week, but like if I just went by recent model stuff that I put in or whatever, he probably would have made the card.
Yeah, he heck of a performance. I know. I feel like you guys have bet him way more than me, like over the past like year and a half. And I say that only because like I don't know if I've ever bet Davis Thompson before last week. So it was a good hit, man. He's coming. I mean, he's really coming into form. I love how he carries himself out there too. Of just like, man, he is kind of stoic and boring, and like it's just he's locked in. Like it feels like a guy who's going to be pretty successful on the PGA Tour as he goes forward with his career. And Matt, I feel for you. I think second place finishes with golf outrights are maybe one of the worst things in sports betting. I'm just going to say that. Like that's I can remember years. I don't know about you guys. There is not a year that sticks out in my mind where I can remember the most amount of outrights that I've hit, but I will never forget 2 years ago where I had 13 second place finishes on outrights.
So yeah. I mean, Wes, we look at, we look at this and it's like, Davis Thompson, I think is a dude that in full field events, I don't know how often we're going to maybe pick him as outright bets. Maybe we like him in placement marks, whatever, but honestly, with the trajectory of his game, maybe that changes here, our thoughts on him kind of. I was always targeting him in these weaker field events, right? Because of his game and his birdie-making ability and stuff like that, and never really considered him at all in the full field events. But if you look at his stat profile and the way that he has improved over the last 2 years, maybe I need to change my mindset on him.
Well, look, he's got a great pedigree. The fact that he was the former world number one amateur, so he was certainly, I think, thought to be destined for success in professional golf. And look, it takes a while. He'd been runner-up 3 times, including in Detroit the week before, twice in his last 6 starts. And you go out and shoot 29 on the front 9, and that all of a sudden makes a Sunday sweat not a Sunday sweat, even though Michael Tjor-Bornson made a little bit of a run on the back 9, cut the lead to 3. But shoot 29 on the front 9, make over 100 feet of putts on that front 9, and was led the field in scrambling last week, 18 of 20 up and downs. I don't know what his ceiling is going to be. I think his ceiling is above winning the John Deere Classic, though. Like I think that he's got some good play in him, and he's going to keep getting better. I don't know how high he's going to rise, but I wouldn't say necessarily he's just a guy that's going to win in weaker events. Now, I want to see him contend in better events. He did get his first major championship top 10 at the U.S. Open a couple weeks ago at Pinehurst, so I want to see, but look, he's amongst a bunch of young guys out there that are hungry for wins, and he finally got one.
Yeah, it was awesome to watch. Though I know people don't like the low scoring. Some of the people don't like the low scoring events. I love watching dudes go out and destroy a course every now and then. Like it's because it's just fascinating to me to see them make more birdies on a front 9 than I've ever made like in my whole life. It's just
wish they'd mix them up more. They got to readdress this schedule. There's multiple PGA Tour scheduling things I'd like to be changing for next year. Like the signature event thing, we've discussed this already on this pod a couple of times, but like the before or after a major, like I kind of like the before a major. It feels like a nice like undercard to the title fight. The after a major just felt weird this year. And then like I'm fine with the birdie fest, Matt. I don't have a problem. I think people, yes, take it too far when they freak out about those, or then the people that freak out about how tough scoring conditions are on some courses. But like, just mix it up a little bit. What if we had like three in a row where they've just been birdie fest?
Yeah, something like that.
I'll take a W though, no matter how I get.
Yeah, exactly.
A dub is a dub. Is a dub, which leads us to the Genesis Scottish Open. This is a much more robust field than we've had the last few weeks. Rory McIlroy, Xander Schauffele, Ludvig Åberg. You got Colin Morikawa, Tommy Fleetwood, Victor Hovland, all at the top of the odds board. No Scottie Scheffler this week, but a whole lot of really good players. Minwoo Lee, Tom Kim, Matt Fitzpatrick, Justin Thomas, Hideki Matsuyama. These are all your guys at the top of the odds board. 750 on Rory, 850 on Xander. Then we go to 16-1 for both Ludvig and Colin, 20 on Tommy Fleetwood, 22 on Victor Hovland, 28 on Minwoo Lee, 30 on Tom Kim, and then everybody else is 35 or longer. I'm sure we will talk about several of these guys throughout the course of all of this, but the Renaissance Club, Wes, what do we need to know?
Yeah, and look, you mentioned the field, 18 of the top 30, by the way, in the field this week in the official world golf ranking. So Renaissance in Dirleton, North Berwick, Scotland, about 20 miles east of Edinburgh, which is the capital city of Scotland, designed by an American designer in 2008, Tom Doak. If you want to know the location of the course more specifically, it's right next to Muirfield, which is a regular track on the Open Championship. Championship rotation. 72-37, par 70. It is links style, but not like a true links like you will see in terms of a lot of these Open Championship courses. So it's a little bit of a parklands and a links course. It's tree lined on some holes, so you know, a little bit different than your typical wide open links, but it does have 83 pot bunkers, no water holes, obviously, and very firm turf. In terms of the agronomy, it's all fescue throughout. The greens are pretty big, 7,000 square feet, roll at about a 10 on the stem. So these are some of the slowest greens that these players are going to play on, especially guys that have been playing on the PGA Tour. They have not played slow greens like this. So they're going to, you know, have to get up to speed, or down to speed, I should say, on these greens. Rough's a little bit thicker than you'll see on most like link style courses. So, you know, fescue throughout. Fairways relatively narrow, I think about 32 yards on average. So par 70, like I said, 72-37. There are three par fives, though, on this par 70, which you usually don't see. You've got one on the front and two on the back, number 10 and number 16 on the par five. So as you mentioned, Rory won here last year, 8-1, where he hit that two iron into like a 35 mile an hour wind gust to about 8 feet, made a birdie and broke poor Robert McIntyre's heart on the 18th because it looked like he was going to win. But weather is going to dictate, I think, how low the scoring is going to get. We've seen 22 under win here, and we've seen 7 under win here, all within the span of the last 5 years. So looked at the initial forecast, and pretty mild wind, I would say, compared to what we've had here before. Some scattered rain on Thursday and Saturday.
Yeah, looking at it right now, right now, as we record, reminder, it is Tuesday evening on the East Coast, a little past 7 o'clock as we record. Wes, it's pretty quiet, really through the weekend, Thursday on. So check back in on that. It is Scotland. Things change. Matt was just there.
Yeah, humble brag.
Tell us about the weather, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, humble brag. What I can say is this, is like, Wes talks about the green speed. That was one of the very first things that was just so crazy for me, right? I mean, I play most of my rounds out of TPC here in Las Vegas, and you know, those are fast greens, right? And so, like, I mean, it is a pretty big difference putting on that fescue greens that are pretty damn slow. And then just for references, Wes talks about the weather really dictating stuff, right? So we played one round at King's Barnes, and it was ridiculous. The wind, the rain, all the stuff, everything was just absolutely crazy. Ball was just flying like ridiculous all over the place. I'm literally teeing off with like a five iron, like like teed way down and just punching it down fairways and stuff. And then I played Carnoustie, which is like the second hardest course in the world, but it was one of that guy, like my caddies was saying, it's one of like 20 days a year that we didn't have wind. And it was like, and it was like gettable. Like the course, you know, like the course was like, actually, you know, the defense is the weather, you know? And I mean, like if it's not there, as long as you're hitting the fairways and not hitting it in the super tall grass, like you could play well. Like I shot fairly well at Carnoustie because I didn't have the wind. So yeah, something like this is why I am kind of focusing on dudes that are birdie makers, with the thought that maybe this plays a little more mild than we've seen sometimes in the past here with all of this. So pretty interesting mm-hmm. stuff with that. And honestly, the field itself, as Wes mentioned, I mean, it fairly deep, but you have some names that have some decent odds attached to them. Right. And so it'll be interesting to see what you guys ended up putting on your card. Some of these dudes, I'll just throw it out there. You know, a guy that we've bet a ton, Kelly, but it's just in horrible, horrible form. Like we've got Max Homa sitting at 60-1, you know, in this, yeah. in this tournament right now, right? Where like this guy, when he was on his run, was like in the 22, 23, 24, 25 range. And now that his form is crap, he's at 60. Right. And so like, there are some dudes whose form isn't all that great that have some really big numbers attached to their name too. And like, I don't know if I'm going to try to beat them to coming back or not. You know, I don't have that in the account quite yet, but some good conversation.
Yeah.
To be had nonetheless.
Yeah. It's been pretty ugly for him, but like, I mean, like you guys are talking about, like this can be such a sharp, you know, turn to like what these guys have been playing to, you know, what they're going to play on out there. You talk about how slow the greens are, you get wind that picks up, you know, I mean, this could completely, we've had guys like, you know, Aaron Rye, who's been playing incredibly recently, but like part of what reason he's been playing incredibly, because he's been putting, he's been putting some of the best putting he's done in his entire career. So, mm-hmm. you know, when you're talking about this shift in greens, it's, well, okay, he's English, great. Like he's probably, you know, he's a little more used to these type conditions than other guys, but I don't know that I'd want to change up, you know, the greens I've been playing on if you're actually finding your putting form for once. So who knows, for someone like Max Homa, maybe it does help correct some things. Hey, worth pointing out too, this is a, you know, not a signature event. It's like kind of funny because this is one of the few almost like invitationals we have left, right? Because it's not a signature event on the PGA Tour. It is a split event between the PGA and DP World Tour. And you get 75 from each. And then there are some, you know, sponsor exemptions as well. So in the new landscape of golf on the PGA Tour, this is a little bit of an odd tournament. We've had it for a couple years now, but especially with the new signature events in place, this is a little bit of an odd standout.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting how this all plays out this week with the weather and with the wind and with all the stuff that goes on there.
By the way, the temps, yep. half of what we have right now here in Vegas. It's okay. 55 degrees, yeah, Fahrenheit, just half.
Hey, man, look, once it gets above 110, it's all the same. Seriously.
It's unfortunately true, yes. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, once it gets above 110, it's all the same. Everyone's like freaking out when it was 120 the other day. Like I went and played 9 holes and like...
Oh, you're weird. Jeez.
And it felt the same as it did 2 days before when it was 115. I mean, it's like, it all feels the same. Like above 110, it all feels the same. Like I don't understand what people are like losing their mind about. Like unless it's like 140 and you're going to melt when you walk out the door.
I was gonna say,
like,
until you pass out. Yeah.
if it's like to the point where like you can't function, like you can't breathe if you walk outside. I mean, it's the difference between 111 and 119 is like nothing. I mean, there's just no difference. There's no difference. You can't feel it. All right, guys. So let's start talking about the stuff that we find important this week and what we ended up putting in our models. Wes, I'll kick things off with you here and see how complicated and honestly, what time frame are you looking at as well with all of this? Because that's a question I continue to get asked. Is like, you know, what am I? How far back am I looking? What am I taking into consideration whenever I'm filling out a card?
Yeah, look, I went a little bit longer, whereas I went kind of the whole season a little bit because like Kelly mentioned, this is split between PGA Tour and DP World Tour members. So I wanted to include the DP World Tour members as well. Sometimes the data is not as readily accessible as some of the PGA Tour data. So I did leaders basically on both tours, and you know, some of the numbers can be misleading because some of the guys, you know, that are PGA Tour players primarily might have played two or three events on the DP World Tour early in the season, so you had to take that into a little bit of context. So I did approach this week, six of the top seven on the leaderboard gained at least almost 2.5 strokes on approach last time out. So if it's not as windy, I think, you know, guys that are very good with the irons can get it pretty close here. I did do distance. Average driving distance was 295 yards. Bigger hitters are going to have the advantage because you don't have as much rollout on the fairway as you're going to have on most links courses. So even though, you know, the turf is firm, that doesn't mean it's going to play like super fast with a bunch of rollout. So driving distance I thought was important. Strokes gained around the green, especially if you do get windier conditions, it gets tougher to gain around the green, obviously, the harder it is because the wind's going to knock the shots off the greens and the pot bunkers, also force chip shots from the tighter lies. So you got to look at around the green. I looked at just general putting, you know, because this is fescue, so there's not a lot of events on fescue on the tour, so I didn't look at the agronomy, but I looked at just general putting, you know, which is going to take into account guys have faced some slower greens, some faster greens. Now, these are going to be to the extreme, though, because these are very slow at 10 on the stimp. Three putt rate, because of the greens that are pretty large and the slow speed of these greens, you can make three putts here. So I looked at three putt avoidance. I looked at in terms of like a yardage group, strokes gained par four, 450 to 500. Also some birdie or better gained as well. And then just like general links or wind courses, with wind, you obviously can discount it if it's going to be as benign as we think it's going to be, but just looked at that for some context.
Yeah, this is where I will do the shout out to our friend of the network, Rick Gaiman, his site over there. Mm-hmm. I usually use three different sites every week. We talk about that all the time here on the program. Just one for me this week because he does have the information that all the other sites don't have. So I didn't use any of the other sites this week and only used his site over there. So again, shout out where it is. We always talk about modeling. Like, again, if you just join us, if you're new, I did not invent a model. I am not a coder. I don't know how to code. I couldn't code my way. Like I couldn't. If someone said, I will give you 6 weeks and you can just figure out how to put a rudimentary model together and I will give you $1 million, I would come out with $0 out of that goal. There's no way. So I use someone else's hard work, but I do put in what I feel to be important, how heavily to weight it, the time frame to look back on, and then trying to find value up and down where I think that the number of the odds attached to the player isn't necessarily where they are modeling out. So again, just that disclaimer. Kelly, yeah, pretty much the same for me. I went pretty heavy off the tee in distance. I did pretty heavy on around the green and scrambling type stuff. I threw in opportunities gained and birdie or better gained because I think that this could play a little milder. I think that this could be one where we want guys who can go out and score. And so I did that. But outside of that, I mean, you know, a little bogey avoidance, little other stuff. I mean, obviously approach just always plays in, but I mean, I'm kind of getting tired of just saying like approach every single week. So it's just, you know, it's like a given, right? Like I'm doing approach.
Yeah. But if you're going to bring up the model spiel, you got to still bring up what's most important in every single week's approach is the most important stat that we're going to talk about. I mean,
do you know what I have? Like I've moved away from, and since we're kind of having the discussion of strategy and things like that, like I don't use the proximity buckets anymore. Like there is such an incredibly weird, like, drastic change between some of these dudes. Like if you put in 125 to 150 and then 150 to 175, it's like, how can a guy be third at 150 to 175 and then, or 125 to 150 and then 150 to 175, he's 99th in the field or something? Like I'm just wondering if like it's a sample size thing or if it's a whatever and all that. And so like I've actually moved away from the proximity stuff. It's like you can either hit approach shots or you can't. It's kind of how I look at it.
I think that's a great point to bring up. I feel like the one that I've brought up that's kind of similar to that before is like when you go to look at, you know, when we talk accuracy numbers huge off the tee, it's the, you know, we'll bring up good drives gained a lot, which I think is a great stat, you know, where guy that does include approach a little bit if you're able to hit the green with your second shot. But it's amazing how you'll see a guy 40th in fairways gained or something like that, and then he's 130th, and you're like, wait, what? Like,
yeah.
Like what? Yeah. I just, I'm looking for someone who's accurate. So I do think I think all this stuff is good to look at, but yes, like you're talking about, I think you need to understand that there is going to be some kind of just wild variables like
that. Yeah, I think the only time I'll really use it in the future is if we're playing on a shorter course where literally it's going to be just like wedges every single time. And like, there are dudes that are like exponentially better wedge players than other people. And like, so maybe that, where we're looking at like the 75 to 100, you know, like something like who are these dudes that are always putting it within 6 to 8 feet from that distance? Like, maybe that's something for me moving forward. But like, the week in, week out of who's good from 175 yards, like it's the 150, 175. It's like, I mean, come on. Like, I think it has to be something, a sample size.
Well, I think it's the extremes. I think this is a good conversation, but I think it's the extremes, because it's, I feel like I bring it up often, and there's one or two guys on my card this week this applies to too, where it's okay, if you're going to play on a long course, you got to be long off the tee, or you got to be able to hit your long irons well, right? Yeah. So like, there is, you know, Colin Morikawa is probably the best example of that. He is not long off the tee. He is great though when you're talking that 200 plus range, 175, 200 plus, that sort of thing. So it's, I think it applies when you're talking. I think it's necessary when you're talking, like we saw last week, right, Matt? It is, okay, wedges. You're hitting wedges. Like, it is very rare that the three of us will sit here on a podcast and bring that up. Well, how many times does it happen a year? Three times a year, basically, where we're like, we're really focusing on this wedge range. You know, it's 75 to 125. And, you know, but we're often talking about the long iron guys. So I understand what you're saying. I think it's the extremes you should still keep in mind.
No, for sure. All right, so that's what me and Wes looked at. Anything different on your end?
No, I think that was a good conversation, because I did include some of those longer proximity ones. Yeah. This is a long course, as you guys talked about. Driving distance is something that I definitely punched in. It feels like I weighed that more heavily this week since, I mean, I feel before the U.S. Open, which is a little weird to say, but I feel like it's been a long time. I've really had to dial up the driving distance numbers. So went up there, hit approach. So that, I mean, that is the majority of the model. Yes, I did include some of the longer proximity ranges, but as you guys talked about already, opportunities game, birdie or better, Matt, I entered those as well. Right now, if we're looking at calm wind conditions, I mean, look, you either want to go one or two ways, right? If you think you're in calm conditions, you want someone who's going to be, you know, close to the pin, attacking the pin, those type of guys. Or if it's going to be a little sloppy, you need a little better around the green play. Yeah. And some of the stuff you can't predict, so we're plugging it all in, right? But, you know, did around the green scrambling like you talked about, just pure strokes gained putting like you talked about, Wes. And then the three-putt avoidance and the lag putting stats. I think those are important when you're talking about greens that are this big.
Guys, when we come back, we'll let you know what the models spit out and what ended up making our betting cards this week. Can Wes and Kelly go back-to-back here with the Scottish Open? Welcome back. Long Shots here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Matt, Wes, and Kelly. Guys, if you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button. Do appreciate that. It's absolutely free, this here podcast, each and every week. So that is how you can support us. And if you want to rate and review, even better, unless you want to leave like anything less than a 4-star, and then you can just keep it. Like, we don't want your 3 stars.
Just tweet it at me.
Yeah, just, whatever. Just
say 2.5 stars this week. You sucked.
Yeah, it'll feel better. It'll feel better. We'll react or something, whatever. But like, yeah, just don't leave it for the Apple. just let us know personally, but don't leave it for the Apple people. Don't ruin it for everybody else. So let's just keep it at that. All right. So looking at the top of the odds board again, it is a short on Rory, short on Xander. Then we jump all the way to 16 with Ludvig and Colin, then 20 on Fleetwood. Only a couple more guys in the 20s there in Victor Hovland and Minwoo Lee at 22 and 28 over at DraftKings. Then everybody else is 30 or longer. I think the odds are correct on Rory and Xander. I think this is about the time for me to say, like, look, Rory took some time off because he felt like he needed some time off. It was I'm sure a devastating loss and all of those things, you know, but I mean, okay, he took the time off. I completely expect him to play fine at this tournament. Like this is not one of those things where it's like, I think he missed out on this major and now his career is going to go down the toilet or anything. Like, I mean, I think he's going to be perfectly fine. He's one or two in every version of every model that I ran. It was either him or Xander. Again, that's what the odds dictate as well. And so I think that that's right. And I think that Rory's going to play just fine. I just don't have a ton of interest in playing him at a super short number. That's just kind of my strategy. That's kind of my style when it comes to golf betting. So probably look for him maybe in some head-to-heads if I find them juicy enough or three balls or whatever it might be, but I don't think I'll be betting him outright. Wes, who were like the top five guys in your model this week?
Yeah, look, Rory and Xander, I think same thing really going forward. They just kind of popped really on everything, and that's why they're priced. It's like these guys, you know, that make these numbers, they can look at some of the same stuff that we do as well. So they were very high on there. The rest of the top five, I had Tommy Fleetwood actually fifth in my top five, which really surprised me this week from some of the numbers I took. Had Ludwig at number four and had Morikawa at number three. So it basically goes kind of like the odds board is going this week.
Yeah, that was I would say if I did it, my top five power rankings for the week, right? It would be Rory one, Xander two, Morikawa three, Ludwig four. Yeah, we'll go Ludwig four and Tom Kim five.
If we're like nitpicking here, I think really the only difference at all between Rory and Xander in this is just the driving distance thing. But it's kind of like at the end of the day, like Xander's not short by any stretch of the imagination, right? I mean, like it's just Rory destroys it, but.
Do you guys give Rory a slight back to Europe bump? I guess I do, but it's very minimal.
I mean, I don't.
Not like, at this point.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, like, no.
I feel like the odds are doing that though. I don't know. I don't know that there should be much of a separation between Xander Schauffele and Rory McIlroy.
Yeah, no. And you can like, and honestly, the numbers bear that out too, right? You start to look and you compare the different categories and it's like, oh, he's better than him. Oh, he's better than this one. He's better than this one. He's better than this one. He just kind of toggles back and forth all the way. And like I said, you know, Xander over the last 24 rounds, he's 17th in this field in driving distance. Like it's not like he's short by any stretch. And that's not going to be something that affects him, I think, moving forward with all of that. Like I said, the weird thing about this for me, and I can't go there and I don't think you guys are going to go there either, but in my 24 round model, Davis Thompson is fifth overall, actually. After a runner up and then a win and then a get on a plane and go over whatever, like I don't really have an interest in betting Davis Thompson. But again, I think that this is where my mindset needs to shift, I think, a little bit, because he's right there with the big boys now when it comes to these stats and stuff. And again, fifth overall in the last 24 rounds.
Yeah, I would say some of the other names that popped up pretty consistently in that top 10 range for me were Minwoo Lee, Aaron Rye, Keith Mitchell.
Yes.
Andrew Novak, Kevin Yu.
Yeah. Anytime you put a lot of, like some of these guys are going to pop up, like Keith Mitchell, anytime, you know, it's just like he's going to pop up. You put driving distance in there, Keith Mitchell's going to pop
up. I'll spoil one already. I played a long shot bomb on Keith Mitchell, and as long as conditions stay the same, I'll play him for first round leader too. You're talking with him at this point, he's like a top 10 ball striker on the tour. Like around the green and putting, you know, let's maybe not have that conversation. It ain't so great, but you know, off the tee and on approach,
it's probably why his win equity is so low, because it's like he can have two really good rounds and then he has like a meh round. And then it's kind of like to win a tournament, you can't have a meh round, you know, like it's
are,
like kind of,
are you implying that he drives for show and does not putt for dough?
No, I'm just saying that I'm saying that Keith Mitchell, we've seen time after time, like he can put two of the four rounds together and then he'll have a kind of off round and then he'll have just a Peter along round, where it's like we don't get four rounds out of Keith Mitchell, don't get four rounds out of Keith Mitchell, which is why I like him way more. And like you're talking about a round leader market or something, or low round of the day market or any kind of thing like that, because if things are going well, he can get after it. It's just they rarely go well 4 days in a row.
yeah Yeah, he's the only guy I've got big, bold, circled right now, a first-round leader, as long as weather doesn't change at all.
All right. I like it. Go ahead.
Just continue?
Yeah, go ahead with your card.
I didn't mix it up too much with bets. I mean, I do think when we are talking about this mixed field between the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour, and you got to, like, everything we've talked about so far, right? Massive changes with the course and the greens and these guys. I think you need to be a little – I think this is the tournament we talk about every year where, like, I love it. I don't know about you guys. Like, I've started to love this tournament, like, every year. But it is the big shift, right? You know, from the PGA Tour summer to go over to Scotland and then get ready for the Open the next week. We bring this up often. I'm not looking to burn too much cash before the Open comes up, too. I want to save some bullets for there. Mm-hmm. So dial back the bets a little bit. Mainly just dabbled in the outright market. Started with Colin Morikawa, though. I did play him. I know I mentioned him earlier. I kind of have a feeling Morikawa will be on my card every week at this point until he wins, because he is hovering right around there. I mean, his game is right now. I mean, it's Scheffler, Rory, Xander, and Colin Morikawa. I think it had a pretty clear separation at the top.
Morikawa third or fourth in all versions of mine that I ran, and I wasn't going to play him until you showed. We got an odds boost. We rarely get odds boosts in Nevada, but you brought one to my attention, and so Morikawa did make my card as well, because we got better odds than you guys get out there.
East Coast. I took the 18, but I was ready to bet him at 16 too. Like that. Yeah. I was ready to bet him at 16. So, and look, I do think this is a perfect example. Like, there's a couple plays I have in my car. I already brought up Keith Mitchell. Great. He's a bomber, right? Mm-hmm. But we run these numbers. And when you have a guy who's still sticking top four, top five in your model, when you're weighing driving distance as heavily as I am, that tells you how good the rest of his game really is for him to be popping up there. So Morikawa for me, again, if you haven't checked, T13 at the Travelers, T14 at the U.S. Open, second in the Memorial. He's on a tear right now. His worst finish since the Masters was the T16 at Quail Hollow. So he's really been playing well. Only played here, I think, once. Missed cut here in 2022, but love where his game's at right now. Really think I'll be back with him almost pretty much every week right now until he does win. So outright play on him, and then I did play a top 10 on him. I wasn't going to dabble too much in the placement markets, but where his game's at and where he ranks in this field, getting about over plus 175 on a top 10 is, I think that's still a good play for me this week. So went with that. Tom Kim next up for me. What do you got? 2 years where he's T6 in the third year, obviously likes playing here. I know that was a tough beat for you guys on him a few weeks ago, but his game kind of coming into form here, too. Second at the Travelers, T26 at the U.S. Open. Yes, he did miss the cut at the Rocket Mortgage, but it was right after that Travelers loss. So,
and he had played like 5 months in a row. Mm-hmm. He had not taken a break. Like, it was like, hey, kid, go chill out, man. Have a beer, you know?
Yeah, I think he was ready for a little break and hopefully recaptures some of his game and you know, takes it to a next level. And of course, he's performed really well at. So I did play an outright on him, and then I played a top 20 with him. And then mentioned Keith Mitchell already. Again, just ball striking ability out of this world. And when you're looking at 80, 90 to 1 on him, that was good enough for me to take a flyer on an outright. The only other guy I played an outright on them was Minwoo Lee. Not someone that I've bet very often at all. His approach numbers always scare the hell out of me. He's one of these weird guys on the tour really right now that is, you know, what would we say, a top 20, top 25 guy on the PGA Tour who's excellent. Not that great with his approach numbers, but he's excellent everywhere else. And he does have a win on this course in 2021. So was really up there in my modeling. I am going to take an outright on him. 28-1 is where I got him at. I think he's right around 25-1, though. I'd play him there. And then two matchups for me, just to finish up the card. I played Morikawa over Tommy Fleetwood. It was minus 115 on Morikawa over Fleetwood. I don't doubt for a second that Tommy Fleetwood will feel a lot more comfortable at this course this week. Mm. And we often talk about where he struggles in the U.S., but where I have these two separated in power, overall kind of just power rankings right now, it's way more than minus 115. So I'll take Morikawa in that matchup. And then Aaron Rye, I play into a minus 115 over a matchup over Davis Thompson. Davis Thompson, if you're doing it right at age 25, you should have been partying after that after that victory last week. And now you're going all the way over to Scotland right away. So I'm going to expect a little bit of a sloppy Davis Thompson out of the gates here.
I like it. I like it. Wes, what made your card, buddy?
Yeah, started it off with Ludwig Gobert at 16-1. I don't know how good of a Lynx player that he is, but I think he's just a good player in general, even though he doesn't have a lot of experience in these type of events. Top 10 on approach, top 10 off the tee in this field. So went with Ludwig at 16-1. He's basically the same price here that he is in the Open. To next week. So I thought, okay, you know, maybe he wins in a slightly downfield without some of the live guys here. Tommy Fleetwood, 20-1, who lost in the playoff here to Aaron Rye in 2020, but he's been fourth and sixth here in the subsequent appearances. So, you know, just kind of a horse for the course play here on Tommy Fleetwood. Tom Kim, I played on 28-1, third and sixth here his last two appearances, couple weeks removed from falling short in that playoff at the Travelers to Scotty Scheffler, so maybe comes in rejuvenated. And then went with the guy that has won here, who we just mentioned, Aaron Rye, 45-1. Won here in that playoff over Fleetwood, and very rainy and windy conditions. So if it's that, then I think that this falls right into those guys' laps. Aaron Rye, when he won this, by the way, it was still exclusively a DP World Tour event. So you've got guys that are still seeking their first PGA Tour victories, and now the Scottish Open could fit the bill for them. Rye was second in Detroit a couple weeks ago, seventh again last week at the John Deere. He was 36-hole leader, second place. He was in that final pairing with Davis Thompson as he and Eric Cole just kind of got run over there on the front nine, but he's playing really good and consistent golf. Thomas Detry at 60-1, another guy seeking that first PGA Tour win, lost in a playoff here to Matt Fitzpatrick back in 2021, runner-up in Houston, top fives at the PGA, top five at Pebble Beach, so he's put together a few good performances this year, so I thought decent number on Detry. And then Nikolai Højgaard, 80-1, who has really had mixed results this year on the PGA Tour, had contended in San Diego when Mathieu Pavon won, but hasn't really done that much of note. But now he's back in Europe on a course where he finished sixth last year. Plenty of links pedigree, has won links events on the DP World Tour before and then contended in others. So I thought kind of a big number on a guy whose form's not very good, but I think you're going to see him on the first page on Sunday here. Nikolai Højgaard, 80-1.
Yeah, so I said I took Morikawa, and that was mainly an odds boost thing. I think I was going to pass on him, but, you know, listen, odds boost is an odds boost, and I'll take the 18-1 on him. So the outlier for me, guys, this week when it came to modeling, and it was just very odd to me, but Justin Thomas was at the top of a lot of the versions of the model that I ran this week, inside the top five in a couple of different versions that I ran. And you kind of dig in and you start to see, like, over the last 24 rounds, he's green across the board, basically, right? And all of the stuff that we put in, I mean, you know, it's gaining off the tee, gaining on approach, gaining around the greens. We got all the stuff that, like, you know, the weighted stuff around the green is really, really excellent. You look at his driving, which I thought was like crap, but it's kind of like total driving. If you look at his total driving, he's 27th in this field, opportunities gained 23rd, 11th in scrambling. We know he's kind of a wizard when it comes to all of that. And it feels like Justin Thomas, weirdly enough, makes a ton of bogeys, but over the last 23, he's ninth in this field in bogey avoidance. So I don't know what I've been missing maybe over JT here over the last little bit, but as I dug in a little bit further, ended up making the card for me. So Justin Thomas out there, and he actually is getting bet. I got him at 40. It's all the way down to 35 already now at DraftKings. So there are some people who are taking notice of Justin Thomas as well.
He's had a weird season. I mean, it's just one of those guys, like Morikawa was kind of mired in that a little bit early in the year, right? But he's got, I mean, Justin Thomas has, what, four missed cuts this year, but then you're talking he's got five top 10 finishes? Like, I think you're right, Matt, where there's some of these guys that just, if they're not doing it almost every week consistently, they kind of just fly under the radar for us. He did pop in one of my shorter-term ones. I don't know how long I considered him, but it was one of those moments where you're like, Justin Thomas, okay, why am I seeing your name this high? So, yeah, he was up there for me.
Yeah, 40-1 I think is pretty fair. The 35 even would be interesting for me. I don't know about much lower than that, but still available out there if you go and look around. Only one more outright for me this week that's on the card currently. Maybe a couple get added, but Corey Connors for me was weirdly showing up inside the top 15 in just about every version of the model. 58-1 here in town. You can still find like 55s out there on Corey Connors if you're rest of country. And you go in and you're like, man, I think we have this deal where we think of Corey Connors as nothing more than like an accurate driver of the golf ball. And then you go and you realize, like, I mean, he over the last 24 rounds, he's averaging 301.18 yards off the tee, right? Which is good for 35th. In this field as it is anyway. And like the difference between where he's at 301.18 and someone inside the top 20 is like, you go to, let's go to Davis Thompson, for example, is at 305.7. So we're talking about 4 yards right off the tee. And that would get him inside the top 20 in this field. I mean, the big difference is just the guys at the top, Rory and Benny On and Minwoo Lee are sitting in the 320s, right? I mean, yeah, there's a massive difference there. But when you're talking about the difference between Corey Connors and basically the rest of the field, it's not really that big of a deal when it comes to driving distance for him. And so you dig in and you start to break things down, and then all the rest of the stuff that we like, we know Corey Connors does very, very well. And so for me, 58-1, even the 55-1s that are out there, he's 13th in the 24. He's 11th in the 32 that I ran.
He's up there for me.
He's just a lot of guy. He does a lot of stuff well, you know. I mean, he just does a lot of stuff well. And so maybe we can run pure for him. Birdie or better gained was the shocking thing to me. Like, he's fifth overall in this field.
Second on approach last 24.
Yeah. Like, it's pretty crazy whenever you put all of that together.
I'm going to guess this is the guy that you were thinking of when you brought up your proximity example. He's 39th and 175 to 200, and then 130th in this field, 200 plus.
Yeah. I know. It's just like, I just don't. Yeah. I think it has to be a sample size thing, right? Because it's just like smaller sample size of those longer irons. And if you have a bad tournament, then it's.
Yeah, it's tough to do it in the mid range. Like, I think, you know, you could do it 200 plus. That's easy enough. Or inside 100 yards, like, that's easy enough. But when you're like going, because some of these ranges, it's like, okay, proximity 75 to 150, well, that's a big freaking range, and there's big freaking differences there. There's not much of a difference between, you know, a 60 yard wedge shot and an 80 yard wedge shot. So inside 100, I think, is the way you can go if you do the real short ones.
And guess what? If you suck from 150 yards out on the PGA Tour, like, you're not on the PGA Tour for long, right? Like, that's where some of this is, like, in there too, right? Like, if you can't hit a damn iron shot for pretty consistently from that range, like, you ain't gonna make it very long.
So shout out to Rick Rungood's site over there. So if you scroll down, if you're modeling over there, there's going to be guys that don't model out very well because it's incomplete stat profile. And so some of the stuff that I put in to my model, they just don't register. And so when that happens, these guys just fall in whenever you start to model. But then all you have to do is just look for the guys that are green basically across the board. And then and when they're missing some of the other stats. And so three guys that I'm going to look at in some way, shape, or form, be it from an outright, be it from a head-to-head, be it from a grouping, I'm going to find some way, maybe it's placement market, but there are three guys that kind of stand out when you go, and there's incomplete information, so they're not going to model well for you, but Tom McKibben, Bernt Wiesberger, and Jordan Smith, if you go in and look at these guys, like, they're pretty green, like, across the board with the stats that we do have on them. It's just they don't have some of the other stats for them, and that's why they don't really pop in the model. And then you go in and you, like, pop things open, and you look at, like, Tom McKibben, who mainly plays over on the Euro Tour, and you see, like, going back to February, it's like 4th, T12, T9. Yeah, there's a cut in there, but T7, T23, T8. There's a 6th outright. There's a 2nd outright. You know, so there's a lot to like about what's going on in him. And then you go to Wiesberger again. And, like, this guy hasn't been cut since early March. And it's, you know, it's a bunch of top 25, T23, T24. There's a T2, T7. There's a 16th outright. And so I think he's more of a placement market type guy, but again, someone that just falls under the radar a little bit, maybe even someone you could use in DFS if you're playing. And then Same deal you go with like Jordan Smith, and this is a guy that like you're just playing for a spike with him, but the odds are going to be astronomical on him, so who really cares? You have T2, you have a couple of T2s in there, you have a bunch of T21, T23, T24, like stuff like that, like guy that can spike. Yeah, there's a couple of cuts in there along the way, but another dude that can spike and can do some stuff. So again, those are three dudes that I just noticed as I scrolled down in the model, and I'm like, you know, why aren't these guys rating well? And it's just because it's an incomplete stat profile, and so they're just not going to get the same weight in the model that a lot of these other guys are. But I think there's a lot to like about those three dudes. And like I said, I don't know if it's an outright bet, I don't know if it's a placement market bet, I don't know if it's a head-to-head. Just dig around, find a way that you think that you have an edge with one of those dudes, and you know, whatever, maybe if you live in a DFS state, maybe it's DFS.
Yeah, Wes has bet all three of those guys, I think, in the past.
Yeah,
I bet
a lot of Wiesberger this year, who has really played well, you know, lost that live contract. And he's obviously won here. He won the first time, actually, here at Renaissance when they held this event. 2019 mm-hmm. was 22 under. So Wiesberger, McKibben has been another guy that's been really playing very well. Lost in that playoff, I believe, a couple weeks ago to Marcel Siem, but he's always on the first page of the leaderboard on the DP World Tour events.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like if you just hit like scrolling, like strokes gained off the tee last 24 rounds, he's second in this field, right? Like it's just like it's one of those deals. Strokes gained approach, he's 10th in this field. You know, it's just he doesn't have all the other stats that I was looking for. Like there's no bogey avoidance stats on him, or like whatever, you know, total driving, opportunities gained. We don't have any of that. So he doesn't model out very well, but like he's got some game. There's no doubt about that. Like dude's got off the tee, dude's got approach, and we like that whenever we're talking about this guy. So, you know, we'll figure it out. Maybe he's a head to head. Maybe he's a grouping. Maybe he's something, but there'll be some bets in there on him for sure. Guys, all of our picks you can find over at VSiN.com/picks. So go in, take a look, see what is going into the accounts. Again, we will keep those updated up until when this thing tees off over there in Scotland. And if you want Wes's write-up, that's over on VSiN.com as well. For Wes, for Kelly, good luck on all your Scottish Open bets.